It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell.
And I'm Rob Ferret. A year ago tomorrow, Adam Lanza, age 20, entered Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, and fatally shot 20 children and 6 adults before taking his own life.
And today, of course, we are following the school shooting in Centennial, Colorado. The AP reporting right now that a student shot at least one other student before apparently killing himself. One other student was injured, but no details yet on that. But since the Newtown shooting, there's been a national conversation about gun violence, gun laws, and mental health issues. However, significant changes to national gun policy have not ensued since the shooting. Now, Vice President Joe Biden is announcing earlier this week that the Obama administration will be pledging $100 million to improve mental health services.
The Consortium for Risk-Based Firearm Policy also released a recent report that assesses the role mental illness plays in gun violence and offers policy suggestions for addressing the issue.
Here with us from the consortium is Beth McGinty. She is an assistant professor in the Department of Health Policy and Management at the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health and a core faculty member of the Center for Gun Policy and Research. Beth, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first things first, I want to get into a little bit of what the study brought up, but I was very intrigued, you know, as I looked at the study, and it's a, 30 some odd pages, about 11 pages of it are sources. And it was surprising to me that there has been so much research on the issues of mental health and gun use. There's nothing really new here.
No, so that's right. We did not conduct any new studies as part of our work with the consortium. We got together a group of national experts to summarize and come to consensus around the existing research in this area.
So tell me about the survey, how you undertook it, how you took that existing research and came to the conclusions that you did.
We initially had a large meeting in Baltimore earlier last spring in March of 2013, where we convened a face-to-face meeting of national experts in mental health, public safety, and also from the advocacy communities in mental health and gun policy, just to try to get everyone talking to each other and on the same page about what the research says. And so after that initial conversation, we began doing some in-depth work reviewing the literature with the goal of, number one, coming to consensus about what that literature says, and number two, making some policy recommendations based on the research evidence.
And that evidence, that word there is key, because throughout the report you see that phrase, evidence-based research. And I wonder if you could touch on that for a second, because, you know, in the last year, particularly right after Newtown, we heard a lot about mental illness and people with guns, but it seemed to be primarily from politicians and people who wanted to change laws and sort of take action now. And you're talking about taking action, certainly, but not necessarily from that political viewpoint. You're talking about evidence-based research. What is that?
So our goal was to formulate a set of policy recommendations that we as researchers feel are supported by the existing research literature. And so what that means is that prior studies have been done showing that certain groups of people, certain risk factors are at heightened risk of violence. So once we came to some conclusions about what those risk factors are, that was the first step in saying, well, we should make some policy recommendations to prevent people who have these risk factors. For example, history of violent misdemeanor crimes. That might be an area where states or the federal government could consider enacting some firearm prohibitions.
So let's talk about the recommendations of the consortium. You back two very distinct paths going forward. So let's take them one at a time. And let's start with the first recommendation.
Sure. So one of the first things that came up in this group was something that perhaps might be surprising to a lot of members of the public, and that was that while mental illness, particularly serious mental illness, can in some cases lead to violence, the reality is that the vast majority of people with mental illness are never violent, and that the vast majority of gun violence is not caused by mental illness. Only about 4% of gun violence in the U.S. is caused by mental illness. So our first recommendation was that rather than trying to prevent sort of a broad sweeping group of people with mental illness from having guns, we should focus on the small subgroup of people with untreated serious mental illness who are at certain times in their lives at heightened risk of having guns, particularly the people who are involuntarily hospitalized for mental illness. And federal law already tries to prohibit people in this group from having firearms, but we made a series of recommendations to strengthen that federal policy and also a recommendation for states to expand and clarify their policy around involuntary hospitalizations, and firearm prohibitions.
And recommendation number two takes a look at evidence-based risk factors for violence.
Correct. So after we came to the conclusion that mental illness is not a primary cause of gun violence in the United States, we started to look at, well, what are some of the other risk factors? And we came to the conclusion that other risk factors supported, again, by the research evidence for violence include history of violence, so violent misdemeanor crimes, domestic violence, and things like substance use, drug abuse, or alcohol abuse. And so our recommendations are that states could consider prohibiting firearms, perhaps for a temporary period, in people with criminal convictions related to those evidence-based criteria. So convictions for violent misdemeanors, convictions for domestic violence, convictions for multiple DUIs or DWIs.
So now you've got these two recommendations out there. You've made them. What now? What happens next?
Well, what happens next is that we are working with policymakers at both the state and federal levels to educate them about these recommendations. And we have gotten a lot of interest, particularly from states who are interested in trying to take some action in this area and understand what the research evidence actually says and what policy proposals are supported by the research.
Now, early on, you said that a lot of people will be surprised by that first recommendation dealing with the role that mental health issues play in gun violence. And I imagine the surprising part is that your research shows that it doesn't play a particularly big role. But yet, so many of these high-profile cases that we see involve mental illness of some kind. How do you separate those two things?
Yeah, so we see these large national tragedies that just capture the hearts and minds of the country and are so important and shattering, frankly. But the reality is that while mental health has been a factor in some of those shootings, when we step back and look at most of the gun violence in the U.S., so over 30,000 gun deaths per year, that gun violence often doesn't make the headlines in the way that mass shootings do, but it has a huge burden on our society. And the vast majority of that gun violence is not caused by mental illness.
We are talking with Beth McGinty, and she is an assistant professor in the Department of Health Policy and Management at the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health and a core faculty member in the Center for Policy and Research. And we're talking with her about the issues surrounding guns and gun violence. I'm Gene Purcell.
And I'm Rob Ferrich. We'll move on to a new topic. Thanks to Beth McGinty for joining us. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.